And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Now, if you just got in the car and Kareem Mortimer is in the studio with me, who is an amazing Bahamian filmmaker, and you're like, oh my gosh, I missed the first 15 minutes. Now you can go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs, and you can listen to the MP3 the day after the show has aired. So go to our website, go to the education menu, drop down to Blank Canvas, and you can listen to, in fact, all the archive shows. But now we're going to get back to Kareem. Hi again, Kareem.
Hello, Amanda.
So tell me a little bit about your journey to become a filmmaker. I think there's probably a lot of people in the Bahamas that are like, oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
How did you do it? I mean, there's not really a booming film industry here. Mm-hmm. I think that's something else we could talk about is what could we do to support a film industry here. But First of all, like, how did you, as just a local boy, get to where you are?
That's a great question. I used to write plays in high school and poetry. And I at one point, I thought I wanted to be an actor. And I didn't want to be an actor. I wanted to be the one telling the stories. And so...
You wanted to be the one bossing everyone around. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to be the author of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I wanted to...
Sure.
Like, I love movies. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it was just more creating the stories that were interesting to me was where I want to be. And so I was, like, 15. And I was like, I want to be a filmmaker. And I had really great parents who was like, okay. You know, they never questioned me, and everybody else did, but my family never did.
That's amazing.
And they were like, let's make this happen. And so I went to film school. Like, I left the Bahamas at 17, just turned 17. And I moved to Miami, and I went to film school at the University of Art and Design.
Mm-hmm. Was there any reason, aside from wanting to tell stories, was it that you weren't seeing stories that reflected you and your scenario as well? Because again, you know, really, I mean, we're talking about, I don't know how old you are, but let's say, you know, 20 years ago, more or less, you weren't seeing a lot of black characters. You certainly weren't seeing a lot of Caribbean characters.
Yeah.
Was that something that you felt you wanted to change, or was it just stories in general?
It was something I wanted to change if I really, really think about it.
Yeah.
And because I would watch these movies that I really, really love, and I would wonder why, you know, why they didn't reflect the way I looked, or the way to have diversity in it, more importantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, showing the dimension of what humanity can be and how they can work together.
Mm-hmm.
And I love these movies. And so it was just like, you know, and breaking out of these archetypes of what race should be, and like how race should function in a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a part of it. It wasn't at the forefront of my head,
but it was there.
I had those questions.
Yeah. So you land in Miami, you land at art school. How was that? I mean, were you well briefed? Coming out of the Caribbean, we don't have a huge, vast cinematic history. How was it to be then plonked amongst other students who probably came from all different kinds of places?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I was one of like three maybe black people there.
Mm-hmm.
It was predominantly guys.
Mm-hmm.
When I got there, the head of the department said that by the end of the year, half of you guys would drop out.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the only a third of you guys would graduate because you would stick with it, and then maybe only three of you will ever work in the film industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at those odds, and I imagined that I was the kid that grew up with one theater.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, the
Super
Street
Video,
the Shirley Street Sunshine Theater.
Yeah. So, and it was another R&D was at the time.
Yeah.
And I was growing up, and it would probably be me. And so I was just like, okay, like, so let me see how long I can last.
Yeah.
And so I just threw myself into it, and
they didn't know about Caribbean tenacity.
Yeah, I was like, let me just last one more day, and then that year I won the freshman show.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Mm-hmm. I won the freshman show, and then I just never looked back, and I was able to really flourish in school and really catch up on so many great films and filmmakers that really moved and inspired me. And it changed my focus, right? Because I wanted to do more genre type work with the diverse, but then it shifted that I was like, oh wow, it's so powerful and meaningful to a life to do something that's more personal and mm-hmm. things that you really care about.
Who was the filmmaker you discovered at film school that you think really changed things for you?
A lot. So Gordon Parks is a big one. Yeah. He's an African-American photographer and filmmaker. And I had actually seen his work before, but I just didn't have a way to do it. Fellini, mm-hmm. Early Spike Lee, a lot of the French New Wave filmmakers.
So my sister was watching, my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter, who also wants to be a filmmaker, by the way, over the spring break, I was watching some, binge watching some garbage on Netflix, and I go into her room and she's watching Le Cat Sans Coup. And I was like, wow, I got up my game then. So she's just discovered the French New Wave as well. So yeah, very inspiring.
Yeah, just the way they edit and the way, the simplicity of the story sometimes.
Yeah. We just showed actually at the National Art Gallery a few weeks ago, or maybe a couple months ago now, as part of our film program, The Bicycle Thief.
Oh, wow. That's a great one.
Yeah, great one. Which is, again, a very simple story about a guy that steals a bicycle. Yeah. And that's pretty much the movie, but it's all about like what that one act of crime does to a family, which I think is so fascinating. Again, that it can just be a small act. And I think the current film, Cargo, is really interesting because, again, it's about human trafficking. And the short film that we screened at the NAGB in 2013 was very much kind of shot from the perspective of the people in the boat that were being trafficked.
Yeah.
And it was a really harrowing short film. But this is more about, as you said in the first section, about it's almost from the perspective of the trafficker.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because you sort of hate him but sympathize with him at the same time. Mm-hmm. So what, you talked about making it personal. What made you want to tell the story from his point of view and try and buy some kind of sympathy for this person who is actually doing something really awful, but at the same time he kind of thinks he's doing something good? Yeah. And so it's like a very complicated...
It's about life in this country, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's about us, sometimes, we live in a small community and we hear all these horrible things that happen, horrible things that we inflict on each other, but we really don't think that we're bad people, right? And so, it was a risk telling a story like this, but I hope that there's some sort of reflection that happens because bad people don't think of themselves as bad people. Mm-hmm. Like, I may do bad things that I may not be aware of, and this is the trajectory of this character.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting to me as a writer, it was interesting to me as a filmmaker because it would provide a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I think the film progresses in a way where you lose sympathy for him, but your sympathy is transferred to another very important character in the movie.
Yeah.
But I was interested in telling an anti-hero story in a way that sort of reflects. Put some dimension to being like making bad decisions,
Yeah, and it also really, I mean, it's interesting. So you watch the film, and I think because you say, we live in a very small community, we all know someone that, someone gets shot. We all know someone who's been shot. Someone has their house burgled. We all know, we all know someone because it's so small, right? That have had these things happen, or someone in the family who's done something, terrible, or isn't allowed back in the States, or whatever it is. There's all these, and good things too. So let's not say it's all bad things. But you see all these very familiar situations, and it's really interesting because it's the first time, certainly for me, that I've watched a film and I'm like, oh yeah, you can identify. I can really identify with here and all the kind of complexity of that. Was that something is that something you continue to want to do? Because it's not so easy making films in the Bahamas. So, and your first film was about the Bahamas as well.
Yes.
And it was about an interracial gay love story.
Yeah.
So not an easy film to make either. But one that was, again, like, I think really deeply thought out and kind of, understanding all the different parallel lives that go on. So is that something that you're just sort of committed to doing? Or do you think one day, I'm going to leave this place behind me and go to Hollywood?
I don't know what my I have an idea for my next. I have my next project. Whether it takes place in the Bahamas is yet to be seen. Like, I think that I've explored a lot here.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I want to tell global stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be a Bahamian filmmaker no matter where I go.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And, eventually, we'd have to make the move. It just depends on what type of life you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And like what type of stories you want to tell. And I mean, I have a good life here, you know, but
don't you think the Bahamian story, I think that's something that I'm always kind of fascinated about, is that I listen, you know, when I've been away and I turn on the radio and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're talking about ourselves again. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it is striking that we don't speak very much about what's happening internationally. Yeah. Right? We're very, very focused on what's happening at home, and there's not a lot of international news shows, or, you know, you get your 2 minutes after the news, but so many things that happen here relate to what's happening in other places.
Yes.
And we never seem to make those correlations. And sometimes if you do, people are like, oh, I don't need to hear about blah, blah, blah. But my, you know, the migrant crisis, I mean, that's now something that is so universal. So it's a Bahamian story, but it totally applies to almost every country in the world now.
Exactly. Right? And so that's the whole process of my filmmaking, right? So, you know, we produce films for the international marketplace by being specifically Bahamian. Like, Cargo is different right now. We're starting here and we're doing a big push here because with Children of God, like, it existed within a certain circle and it did really well internationally. But, like, it didn't, I wanted it to, it could have been pushed more. With everyone seeing it the way that people are able to interact with Cargo, like by seeing the trailer and sharing the trailer and whatnot. I think the Bahamas is a microcosm of what happens in the larger world. And we have important lessons to teach. Like Nicolette Bethel once said that there's only 400,000, 300,000 at the time Bahamians in the world. So what we have to say about the world is really, really, really unique. And so people want to hear what we have to say. And and yeah, and I agree. We do have a voice to lend to the larger conversation, especially with the film about migration and immigration, which is such a hotly topic now. Yeah. I think it would always be a hot topic because, especially in times like this, where people feel they have to protect a lot of things. And
well, I think it goes. It's like you know, biological rhythms. It's sort of an up and a down. Because I mean, I remember when, you know, again, like I moved to the UK when I was very, very young, 5 years old. And, you know, that was in the early 70s. So that was, I'm telling everyone how old I am. And that was on the back of, like, the big, you know, Caribbean migration, to, you know, in the 50s in England. So, you know, there's always been, you know, and then it kind of, that settled down. And then, you know, we had the wave of immigration from Pakistan and from India in the UK. And then that settled down. And so there, it always seems to be kind of, you know, these waves of of these moments. And they're normally about, you know, economic crises, really. That's what it's about, is when, you know, people are squeezed economically. They have to move around to survive.
Go to where resources are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it seems to be kind of, you know, again, it swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, and we all did that, right? We all, like, if we looked enough, deep enough, if we all... We all immigrated from Africa, right?
Yeah, every one of us. Exactly.
And so we moved for some
every
reason.
Every single one, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like, we didn't sprout from the ground.
Yeah, no. And moved on somewhere to find somewhere you could make a living and raise a family.
Even
so,
the coconut trees migrated somewhere.
That's
right?
True. I know. When I found out coconut trees were not native to the Bahamas, I was like, what?
Or even as part of the world, they're from Asia.
They're from Asia. It's true. It's true. I know.
And mangoes.
I know. Listen. The sculpture garden we're doing at the NAGB is all supposed to be all native. And our botanist, Ethan Freed from the Bahamas National Trust, is always like, no, take that yellow elder, not native. You know, bougainvillea, not native. And I'm like, what? Sugar apple, not native. So it's very, very interesting when you get down to it. And I think that's, again, that leads to another conversation about what becomes a culture. It's this kind of blending of.
But isn't
the
yellow elder a national?
Yellow elder is, but of course it was not here before the Europeans arrived.
Oh, wow.
So, because basically, you know, European people wanted to kind of recreate their nice gardens. And so they were bringing in flowering shrubs that, you know, they couldn't plant roses and they couldn't plant things that grew somewhere in a European climate. So, yeah, a lot of the things that we associate with being Bahamian are actually technically, again, not native, if you want to be that strict. So, again, it leads to that discussion about, like, when do you want to draw the line? You know, when do you, and I think that's a very big conversation, but one that your film kind of brings up too.
Yeah.
Because it does also involve, I mean, you see a spectrum of genders, races, colors in that film, which really does absolutely summarize the Bahamas totally. And everyone in it is kind of like, you know, Bahamian from all these different walks of life. So after the break, we're going to talk more about that. I'd love to talk a little bit about the cast and how you did the casting. And, you know, what the draw was for a lot of those people to, like, make a movie here. and, you know, what we can do to generate more films being made here. So I'm speaking with Kareem Mortimer, who is a Bahamian filmmaker who should be very well known to many of us and is very well known on the international circuit. And he's just come out with his latest film, Cargo, which you can get tickets to go to the premiere at Atlantis on Thursday the 19th. There's a red carpet at 6 p.m. and the film starts at 7:30, and you can buy tickets at the NAGB, at Dungalik, or online at cargopremiere.com. So come out and support our Bahamian filmmakers, please. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Awesome.